Hello, everyone, and welcome into the Sun Devil Source Report podcast. I'm Blake Neiman, joined by publisher Chris Cartman on a big day of news in Arizona State athletics, especially in the football department, as the NCAA put out a release today updating that ASU had committed level one infractions during the COVID-19 recruiting period. And Chris, lots of implications and things in regards to this release, but what does this overall just mean for ASU?
Right. So essentially what we've been telling everyone for the last 3 years was just validated by the NCAA, which found that ASU was guilty of a mitigated level one infractions case that involved quite a few members, at least six. It's actually more than that. We're going to be doing some additional reporting on it, but at least six members of its football staff. That's not necessarily all coaches. That's also support staff. That ASU basically hosted and met with quite a few recruits during a period in which it wasn't allowed during the COVID dead period. And as a result, ASU will suffer some additional recruiting infractions beyond what it has already self-imposed over the last 3 years, which or really 2 years, which has been quite extensive, dating back to December of 2021. The additional punishments are really just, and this isn't from the NCAA, but our reporting, there are several weeks between now and August 1st when ASU will not be able to host or meet with recruits. And then there are several weeks in which ASU will not be able to have digital contact with recruits, phone, email, direct message, et cetera. And then ASU will have a additional scholarship reduction of one for this upcoming season. It's already had a seven scholarship reduction over the last 2 years. And then there will be some monetary punishments as well. All of the recruiting infractions, or pardon me, all of the recruiting penalties will be completed essentially by August. So there won't be any additional recruiting limitations beyond that in terms of visitors on campus or the ability for ASU's coaches to go out recruiting or to contact prospective student athletes. So only the one scholarship reduction penalty. Overall, this was actually quite a good development for ASU because there's three tiers in the level one infractions. There's an aggravated case in which it's quite severe, a lot more scholarship loss, multiple years of postseason ban, and many more penalties. And then there's a standard level one case, which for a long time, we thought this might be a standard level one case. That would have been a lot more penalties as well. This is a mitigated level one case. And the NCAA said that ASU did an exemplary job of cooperating through the investigative process, including Michael Crow. So I want to back up a little bit. I think a lot of people maybe aren't aware of this, even though we've talked about it quite a lot. ASU has had self-imposed penalties starting in December of 2021 when Herm Edwards was and Antonio Pierce were not allowed to go on the road recruiting, and continuing on through the entirety of 2022 with some additional restrictions on how many recruits could come on campus, coaches not being able to go off campus to recruit, and scholarship reductions. And then people know that ASU took a self-imposed postseason ban last year, which really the analysis that I have that it should have happened a year before along with additional penalties, but it didn't. Now, a lot of people are hung up on part of the NCAA announcement, which is that ASU will have 4 years of probation. That started on April 15th. But even though ASU has 4 years of probation, that in and of itself is not penalizing, meaning that there's no penalties that are the probation. What it really is, effectively, if ASU commits additional recruiting violations with this staff or any other staff, in that next 4 years, then those will be viewed as aggravated for because it's under this probationary period. So a lot of people have said that this was a lot harsher penalty than they expected, or more than they expected, or whatever. And this actually really isn't major penalties moving forward. The cumulative effect of that this has had on ASU has been quite significant, because the specter of being under investigation by the NCAA for 3 years absolutely tanked recruiting, led to the staff change, and has made it harder for Dillingham to recruit in his first year plus and his staff. And then there's a whole separate part of this, Blake, which has to do with the much more significant infractions that are going to be levied against individual coaches who participated. And so, for example, Herm Edwards will have a minimum of a 3-year show cause penalty by the NCAA, maybe longer than that. We just know that it's at least that long right now. And what does that mean? Show cause penalty means nobody else can hire Herm Edwards unless it wants to also take on the penalties that ASU has been dealt. So that's not going to happen. And he's, you know, 69 or something anyways, he's not going to get a job. But what really matters is this demonstrates that he was personally involved and responsible for what happened. And then at least 5 other coaches and or staff members also are getting show cause penalties of 3 or more years, including multiple former assistant coaches at ASU who lost their jobs as a result of this. We know that Chris Hawkins, Prentice Gill, Adam Brenneman, Zach Hill, and Antonio Pierce all lost their jobs related to this. But because this is a negotiated resolution finding by the NCAA, there's an additional part of the process that's unfolding with Antonio Pierce and one other former staff member who did not agree to the negotiated resolution. And they're going through a separate committee on infractions process. And only at the conclusion of that process will the NCAA put out a lot more specifics on the entirety of the punishments for the individuals and what events led to those punishments.
So Chris, with that in mind, with the previous coaching staff in mind, a lot of these, or punishments, I guess you could say, or restrictions and probation is going to be affecting this new staff at Arizona State. So how should ASU fans feel regarding the previous staffs and their misdoing in their recruitment process in the COVID-19 period, and how now the new staff is having to pay the price for it?
Sure. Well, so the first part of that really is that unquestionably at this point, the NCAA has found that Herm Edwards was personally responsible. And that is not a surprising finding to anybody who's reading or following Sun Devil Source. If we go back to February of 2022, okay, which was about 8 months after news of the investigation broke in June of 2021, Michael Crow, ASU's president, went on 98.7. And he said that while Herm Edwards is responsible for everything that goes on in the football realm, he himself was not at fault or participating in what took place with these recruiting infractions. But that was incorrect. And we knew that at the time was incorrect, because the day that he said that, I was able to put out some reporting that gave specifics of what Herm Edwards did in his participation in the recruiting restrictions or the recruiting infractions. So the point here I'm trying to make is that Michael Crow should have known or did know and was dishonest in what he said, one or the other. If he didn't know, that doesn't make any sense, because the recruits who were impermissibly recruited at this point had already, for some weeks and or months, had been meeting with NCAA investigators to convey to them what happened in their recruitments with ASU. And ASU's compliance department officials were on those Zooms and able to share that information through the compliance department up to the person who's in charge of that, who at the time was Jose Cardenas, who then reports to Michael Crow. So there's a lot of now additional questions that have to be asked about Michael Crow, why Herm Edwards didn't lose his job earlier, why Herm Edwards was given $4.4 million to step down after those three games in the 2022 season, why Ray Anderson was retained and kept on, why Ray Anderson has been able to keep his salary as he's transitioned from ASU's athletic director to a law professor at ASU School of Law. And we're going to be trying to get answers on that. We may or may not, but those questions need to be asked. Now, the punishments that have already taken place didn't impact Kenny Dillingham until he took over at ASU, of course. But once he took over, he and his staff members have had some of these punishments that they've already been dealing with. So for instance, they were not allowed to bring as many recruits on campus for official visits in their first full year. They, in January, did not go on the road recruiting for one full week, the whole staff, when everybody else was. In February, there was one week where they had no communication that was allowed between them and recruits. And now they're going to have additional several weeks of, as I said earlier, no visits with recruits and or no hosting recruits, no contact with recruits. Now that's all going to be over by August 1st. But these recruits that they're trying to get to commit to ASU right now, they're going to be not able to have as much interaction and or communication with them as other schools will be able to in the next few months. So that is a potential factor that could impact one or more of their targets in recruiting. Beyond August 1st, they're going to be able to do everything the same as their peers, but there could be some lingering impacts from the penalties that they've already incurred. And it's hard to really, it's that subjective how much that there is. But what I would say is that once we get through this recruiting cycle, there's not really any additional penalties or punishment that should affect this staff.
So Chris, with the 2022 season being a debacle, along with the 2023 season for Sun Devil football, I'm curious to get your thoughts on how this whole situation has set back Arizona State football.
Well, it happened at a really bad time for ASU or for any school, because as you know, we've now seen this evolution to the NIL model, where people can pay student athletes to perform at whatever schools that they want. ASU was behind the curve in NIL, partly because it was very concerned about getting out ahead of its skis on NIL and other things related to it due to being under investigation by the NCAA. So, and Ray Anderson was an embattled athletic director at all of this time. So ASU was very much sort of, its attention was occupied by all of this other recruiting infraction stuff and the issues with its leadership, its what was going on with Herm Edwards and Antonio Pierce and the entire athletic department. And those things prevented these people who already probably wouldn't have been good at this, but it prevented them from being focused on trying to accelerate ASU's NIL programs and fundraising, the boosters and people who are responsible for being shareholders of ASU athletics. They were very disenchanted and didn't really understand what all was taking place. And so a lot of them were on the sideline, or they were choosing to not put their money forward to help support ASU athletics or its NIL during all of this. So that was the literally the worst time that you possibly could have for that to happen. And that's like part of the reason that Herm Edwards lost so many of the recruits that they added, who were really great prospects. I think people know Jaden Daniels and Johnny Wilson and Ricky Pearsall and Tommy Hill and Isaiah Johnson and so on. They lost like all of their top recruits over like a 2-year period because of the investigation, the staff upheaval, coaches losing their jobs, and ASU not having any sort of cohesive plan on NIL. And all of that in totality pretty severely put ASU behind a lot of its peers in these areas. And those things are now having to be attempted to be overcome in what Kenny Dillingham is doing. Of course, as you know, ASU hasn't had an athletic director for 5 months now. And that also is a problem because there's no clear direction and leadership and no clear buy-in from the ASU booster community about what's actually happening in Sun Devil athletics. So to say that these guys who have been in charge, I say guys because, you know, it's all men, these men who have been responsible for this, Michael Crow, Ray Anderson, Herm Edwards, and Antonio Pierce primarily, right? They have devastated ASU's athletic department. And it not to say that they can't overcome this, but it's going to be really hard.
So one man who will be trying to lead the charge in trying to turn it around and overcome it will be Kenny Dillingham. And he just brought on a new wide receivers coach to his staff to replace Rashad Samples, who took a job at Oregon as the assistant head coach and running backs coach with the Ducks. But Kenny Dillingham brought in some star power of his own, replacing Samples with Hines Ward, a Super Bowl MVP and longtime 14-year NFL veteran. So, Chris, we saw him out at practice on Tuesday, got to see a glimpse of his coaching style. Pretty energetic, intense guy. What are some things that you took away from his coaching style and the way he's interacted with ASU's receivers?
So he has an infectious personality. And you see that. Like, I think recruiting and connecting with young people is about personality. It's about the ability to engage and motivate and tailor your approach individually to different guys. And it's about your work ethic. Well, Hines Ward was one of the best blocking wide receivers in NFL history, and 12,000 or something career receiving yards. He maximized his potential as a person, as a football player, as much as you possibly can, pretty much. And so I just, there are a lot of coaches who retire and they, or pardon me, a lot of, you know, former players who retire and they kind of coast and they're just hanging out, working and whatever. Hines, there's nothing about Hines Ward that leads me to think that he's going to be that type of a person. I don't even think he knows how to be like that. I think he's going to be a maximum effort type of a guy. Nothing against Samples, but Samples arrived at ASU after coaching running backs with the LA Rams. He'd never really coached wide receivers at a high level before. And I watched him coach quite a lot. He was fine. I don't expect that he has the same sort of seasoning or polishing ability of Hines Ward to develop receivers. And what ASU needs right now more than anything with its wide receiver group, because it has a bunch of veteran experienced guys, is that additional knowledge that somebody like Ward, who played the position at such a high level, has that he can provide to these guys. It's about situational understanding and awareness and cues and things that you can read from what a cornerback is doing, or understanding zone coverage and how to adjust, settle your routes, do different things, and techniques about getting off the line of scrimmage. All these things are very kind of advanced that you learn over many years, right? So I think that it was a very good hire in that respect. The question was always going to be, how good of a recruiter was Hines Ward going to be? Well, it didn't even take a week, and Hines Ward was chiefly responsible for ASU landing a commitment from Adrian Wilson today, as we're recording this on Friday, who is a top 200 national recruit. And he's, depending on where you look, that the 24/7 Sports composite or 24/7 Sports individually, he's ranked 16th or 18th wide receiver nationally. That's the highest ranked high school wide receiver recruit that ASU's had in some years, probably the last 3 years, I would say. And he is higher ranked commitment than anybody that ASU got in the last class. In fact, the highest since Jaden Rashada. So, you know, he's going to be a senior this year. So he's still a year plus removed from being at ASU, but Hines Ward has a really good room that he's working with, including Troy O'Meary, who looks like a star in the making. He's had a phenomenal last week of practices after spending really a year recovering from the serious knee injury in 2022. Also Troy O'Meary looked really good in the first couple of weeks of spring ball before he banged up an ankle a little bit. And now he's not been practicing, but it's not serious. Jake Smith is out there, former Gatorade Player of the Year, was at Texas USC, back at ASU. Melquan Stovall was ASU starter in the slot last year. He's a good player. And Xavier Guillory was a starter for ASU last year. I think it was fourth maybe in receptions for ASU before he had a foot injury that knocked him out and he had surgery, but he actually looks quite good this spring also. So I feel like they have five receivers ready to go at a pretty high level, but they lost their most productive Elijah Badger to the transfer portal, a guy who had 135 catches and more than 1500 receiving yards over the last 2 years.
Yeah, Elijah Badger, amongst the trio of transfers for the Sun Devils, the spring portal palooza has arrived in full force in Tempe, as along with Elijah Badger departing was fellow teammate tight end Bryce Pierre. But arguably the biggest headline of them all is Jaden Rashada, the Sun Devils' week one starting quarterback last season, and was slotted to be the starter before he got injured for the most of last season and was injured coming into this spring ball with a hand injury, but now has decided to take his talents elsewhere. Chris, how big of a deal are these losses? Seems like some pretty big hits for the Sun Devils. And what does this mean for this ASU team and how they'll now evaluate the spring transfer portal that Kenny Dillingham has emphasized that he doesn't necessarily want to live in?
Yeah. So there's no doubt that Jaden Rashada and Elijah Badger are two of the guys that you wouldn't want to lose. Bryce Pierre as well. You wouldn't want to lose any of them. They'd all be pretty high on your offensive list of guys that you wouldn't want to lose. So there's no sugarcoating that whatsoever. Somebody asked me how much does this change ASU's win forecast for the season? Actually, it doesn't really change it that much. Now, people may be surprised by that, but like all of the betting markets, they're not changing on ASU's win total because of this. The reality is that Rashada had a thumb injury that required him to have surgery earlier this year. He wasn't even taking 11 on 11 in the first 8, 9, or 10 practices and just started, and he was with the third team. Sam Levitt, the Michigan State quarterback transfer, was ahead of him, partly because of the surgery, but also partly because he had played decently well in the last week and a half. And I think the trajectory has been pretty good for him. He threw 2 touchdowns to Jordan Tyson on Saturday in a scrimmage. He had another one on a bomb to Tyson on Tuesday. So I think that Rashada, it's hard to get in somebody's head, but I think he realized that this other guy who's in the same class as him was probably ahead of him right now. And so did he want to gamble and stay at ASU and try to take that on and try to overturn that in August? He decided he didn't want to do that. Wanted to try to go find somewhere else. Now, my suspicion is he goes somewhere where he's not going to start this year, but maybe where they have a senior starter and then they don't have a junior or sophomore who looks particularly an heir apparent-ish, right? So that maybe, you know, he can do. And then also NIL is a factor, right? he was getting compensated to some degree at ASU, but he probably can make more elsewhere. And in the case of Elijah Badger, there's no doubt that he can make more elsewhere. Is he going to be a number one receiver at a top 15, 20 school? Probably not, but he probably can be a number two receiver at some of those schools. And he'll have plenty of opportunity to go elsewhere. He is coming off a back injury. He had a disc issue, a herniated disc issue that happened against Oregon late last year. And so he's been non-contact and not full participant this spring. So that's, you know, back injuries are a little bit dicey. So, you know, there wasn't a guarantee that he was going to be able to be healthy even at ASU. And as I said, ASU, very good shape at wide receiver. As long as there's no additional transfers or injuries, I think it's still one of the team's best position groups. Bryce Pierre, one of three tight ends who are all reasonably close together, I would say, on the depth chart battle, along with Marquiston Douglas, who transferred from Florida State, and also Cameron Harpo, who transferred from San Diego State. But only three scholarship players until Jaden Fortier, the high school addition, the number one recruit in Oregon by 24/7 till he arrives this summer. But Fortier has an ACL injury he's recovering from, so he's not going to – you can't expect much from him this season. And that means ASU needs at least one tight end in the transfer portal to offset the loss of Bryce Pierre. And then also ASU's down to two scholarship quarterbacks. It's Levitt and Trenton Bourget. Trenton Bourget's played a lot, and he's a fine, serviceable option, but – you need to improve your situation at quarterback. You can't go in with two quarterbacks. So ASU is going to have to, in my opinion, take another quarterback in this transfer window. And I don't know who candidates really are yet that they're targeting, but I think it's probably going to happen reasonably quickly. And I think perfect world situation for ASU would be take a senior who can either start or be a quality backup. And then ASU has a four-star 2025 quarterback commitment, Butter Tolleson. So you can get him in another year. Maybe Levitt stays. Maybe you need to get one more transfer quarterback or somebody else. It's just really hard, Blake, in this NIL era and in this transfer era to keep more than two or three quarterbacks on your roster because guys are going to constantly bolt if they're having to wait their turn or they suspect that they're not going to win the job. And we're going to probably move toward more of an NFL style rostering of quarterbacks where at most there's three on scholarship, even though you'd rather have four.
Chris, I just wanted to get your perspective on this kind of entire situation of just the new changing landscape of college athletics, because it's not just ASU that's been affected by the spring portal and NIL and things like that. It seems like the game is just so rapidly changing and all across college athletics. So I just wanted to get your thoughts on this new changing landscape and how this is going to affect Arizona State and plenty of other colleges around the country.
Yeah, I think it's still evolving. There's going to be additional rules and regulations and legislation that continues to change this over the next year or two. The bottom line is that it's essentially free agency for everybody every year. So imagine that. Imagine if your favorite professional sport league, every single player could do whatever they wanted every single year. There's no multi-year contracts.
Then how are these kids learning commitment? I'm just confused on that part.
The word commitment doesn't really mean anything.
So how are they going to learn from adversity? How are they going to stick through a tough situation when they can just bounce and find another option?
You know, the sad part about it is they're not going to be required to do that by any legislating body. What that's going to come down to is, do they have parents? Do they have high school coaches? Do they have mentors? Do they have advisors that impress upon them the value of learning within a system, elevating yourself within that system, demonstrating to the coaches that you deserve the opportunity and that you can be trusted and empowered and that you can go from being a backup to a starter and so on. And also, we are now in a world where half or more of every roster is going to be transfers. It's going to be servicing needs that are 1 or 2 year needs. ASU, for example, took 20 or maybe just over 20 Division I transfers so far, and we'll add a few more in the spring portal, I'm sure. Certain positions are of need. Quarterback mentioned it, tight end mentioned it, right? You could always probably use another pass rusher or another offensive tackle. So you can't, you know, those are possibilities as well. But what I think Kenny Dillingham smartly did with his staff, only one of their winter transfer portal players, Jeffrey Clark, was a senior. Everybody else is a junior or sophomore. So it's guys who are transferring, some of whom have transferred multiple times. And then you have to impress them with your culture. You have to impress them with your honesty and your transparency. You have to show them, we're going to develop you. We're going to enable you to grow and become the best version of yourself in this period of time. And that's going to help you keep the longer perspective in mind, which is your professional prospects, your ability to maximize who you are in the long term, even more than the short term. And I also think that NIL is going to, you're probably not going to have as much NIL in the long term as you have now. Once a lot of people see that they're not getting a return on investment for their NIL, and or once you see that a lot more of these NIL programs are relying on small amount donors. So at ASU, for example, the pathway to success is not to rely on big boosters who have never really been able to outspend most of the elite blue bloods of college football. The pathway to success at a place like ASU is to get a lot more people, because it's a huge demographic of people who have gone to ASU, graduated from ASU. It's to get a lot more of those people to give $10, $20, $30 a month. You know, you want to make up a donation of Pat Tillman, $42 a month. That's $500 a year. Okay. Roughly. If you get 10,000 people that give $500 a year, right? I'm not good at math, but that's, you know, a lot of money, right? You're getting into, you know, huge amounts of money. So that's the type of thing that needs to happen for a school like ASU to be able to compete, to retain its best players. And then the other thing that's going to have to happen now is a differentiator for a place like ASU is going to be very good targeted evaluations of players at lower Division I levels. You got to go smartly and get the right FCS players. Shamari Simmons was playing at an FCS program before he ended up being 1 year before he ended up being ASU's MVP. Dee Ford was an FCS player. Xavier Guillory was an FCS player. And there's others. And then there's group of five players. You got to go get them. And then you got to go get guys that weren't playing at the blue blood programs, like a Clayton Smith or a Prince Dorba or a Deshaun Mallory. All those guys can make a huge impact for you for a year or 2 years or more, as will be the case at ASU. So the landscape has changed quite dramatically. Is it for the better? Probably not. I'm going to be really honest with you. It's better for kids to have stability, to not be thinking so short term in their mindsets. And allows for better development as football players rather than changing every year and chasing this or that or the other. So I hate to say it, but this is the world that we're in, and we cover ASU. And so we're going to continue to talk about all of the factors and variables and what needs to happen for ASU to try to compete and be successful. And, you know, I would say the overarching reality here is it's not going to happen without Michael Crow and ASU's athletic department leadership having the right paradigm, the right construct to allow all of this stuff to happen the proper way. So a lot of people are very disenchanted and hurt by what college athletics have become. And it's robbed them to some degree of their passion and their interest in ASU athletics, which is very understandable. But the thing I would say is, if all the people that feel that, write a letter to Michael Crow, write a letter to the Board of Regents, give a small amount of money to the collective. I'm not even talking, I'm talking $10, $20 a month, right? If thousands of people did that, that in and of itself would be the change that ASU needs. And it sucks that that's the reality and that the leadership void is so poor that this is a situation that ASU is currently in. But we just have to be very clear-eyed about all of the factors that have contributed to this and how ASU can unwind from this, if at all possible. And people really like Kenny Dillingham. Like, the dude is an alumnus. He grew up an ASU person. He was on Todd Graham's staff as a graduate assistant in his early 20s. He himself has gone out and worked really hard to try to develop NIL. He talks about activating the Valley. A lot of passion exudes from this guy, right? And so even if you're not happy as a fan with like college athletics and Michael Crow and what happened with Ray Anderson, the former staff or whatever, what are you going to do as it relates to this particular situation now with Kenny Dillingham and what ASU is trying to do moving into the Big 12? I just ask. If you don't want to do anything, that's fine. That's cool. But if you stay on the sidelines, and most people do, probably not enough change will happen at ASU.
So much interesting topics that we can get into. So much stuff to cover. So many more details to dive into. We'll all get into it in our reporting here over the next few weeks. And we're just talking about the gridiron. There's plenty more to get to on the hardwood as ASU landed a commit today from the transfer portal in Alston Mason. His dad, Alton Mason, was an ASU point guard, 3-year starter for the Sun Devils at one point. Alston, his son, averaged 17.5 points per game. He has 1 year of eligibility remaining, and he's the second ASU transfer commit after Bashir Jihad, a 6'9 forward from Ball State. He is also averaging double-digit points. So lots more to dive into, as we know that ASU has lost a bulk of its roster, that Bobby Hurley is going to need to replace with Frankie Collins headed to TCU, Jemiah Neal, and many others in the portal, along with the freshman Braylon Green and Keel Watson. And now we just recently saw Kamari Lands hop in the portal. It's just so much roster turnover. That's a whole separate issue that we'll dive into the next time we get on the Sun Devil Source Report pod. But Chris, again, thanks so much for the insight. Lots of stuff going on in ASU athletics right now. I'm sure everybody appreciates all the effort you're putting in. I know I certainly do. And we'll keep trying to keep the public as informed as we can. But again, thanks so much, everybody, for tuning in. We'll see you in the next one.